You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, today on the show, we're at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club in Springdale. We'll have Brandon Marcello from CBS Sports with us. Also, Christina Long, Ethan Westerman. We'll have a roundtable about Razorback football and the SEC. First, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey everybody, how you doing? It's good to see everybody. Brandon, this is a nice suit, man. I didn't know you were wearing all blue suit.
Yeah.
You wore mine.
I was trying to find something neutral, but not Notre Dame blue, so it's good.
Okay, so before we get started here, you made a few headlines earlier this week with some comments about Bobby Petrino. I want to give you a chance to just kind of address that, and you addressed it on Twitter. What do you got to say about it?
I stand by my reporting. I've been doing this for 17 years, and when I'm wrong, I issue a correction. And I know Bobby Petrino's had some friends go on the radio and defend him and speak for him.
All right. Let's get to the...
So Bobby's been on the phone.
There you go. Let's get to talking about the Razorbacks, college football as a whole. There's a lot of talk right now about Sam Pittman. Does he survive the season? If he does he make it back next season? We've seen teams, Virginia Tech, UCLA, Oklahoma State, they've already made coaching changes. Brandon, we'll start with you. What are the benefits to making a coaching change in season? Like, is there a benefit to being out ahead of everybody else and maybe getting in line, being able to talk with coaches? And then what are the drawbacks to that?
Yeah, I don't see much positive for a program these days, because when you do it early in the season, all it does is it opens a transfer portal for your team for 30 days. So anybody at those programs with fire coaches, they can enter the portal. Now, they can't go somewhere else and play this season, but it allows your players an extra 30 days to go, I don't like this situation. I don't know who my head coach is going to be. And a lot of them could leave. The other problem is that these schools are not going to be able to hire a new head coach in the next 30 days. They're most likely going to have to wait until after the season. So I think from the feedback I've gotten from people at UCLA and especially at Virginia Tech is that maybe it was the best thing, because those coaches had completely lost the program. They were both 0-3, losing some very bad games against opponents that are much lower than them. But the unintended consequence of that is now they're having to re-recruit every single player on their roster, and they're also having to get their ducks in a row as far as preparing to go hire a head coach. So, for example, Virginia Tech, on September 30th, here in 5 days, they're sending a proposal in front of their Board of Trustees, which I think they actually call the Board of Visitors, to increase their athletics budget by an average of $50 million a year so they can help entice a new coach to come there and say, hey, we're real serious about football and putting more money into it. But again, that's a situation where you're doing that now, but you're not going to be able to hire a coach until November or December, because a lot of the coaches are obviously still coaching, and they're not going to leave in the middle of the season, especially if it's a head coach. They're not going to do so till the end of the year. So I've been hearing more or less, like, unless you just know that the coach has, like, lost your program and you're just suffering really embarrassing losses, you probably shouldn't be firing a head coach in the middle of the season anymore. So I think, for example, at Florida with Billy Napier, that's one of the reasons why he wasn't let go after the Miami game this past weekend. They're on a bye week. A lot of people thought, hey, it makes sense. Get rid of them, bye week, get everything together. No, they don't want to risk all of that at this point early in the season. They've got a second bye week later in the year. Maybe they do something then, but what do you gain firing a head coach at this point in the year? Maybe a few extra ticket sales or something like that. it's just not worth it when it comes to the health of your program in the future.
I'll localize this for Christina and Ethan. You know, with Hunter Yurecek, the feeling I get is that he does not want to make a coaching change in season unless things are going absolutely terribly. And you know, terrible is, there's a lot of ambiguity to that. What is terrible to you? It may not be terrible to somebody else. But it just feels like there's a difference between what's happened at the programs that Brandon was talking about and being a couple of ways or a couple of plays away potentially from being undefeated.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think, you know, like you said, terrible is a relative term. So people are feeling bad right now after a loss to Memphis. But the loss they took to Memphis and the loss they took to Ole Miss, is those are not the same as what we saw UCLA, Virginia Tech, and Oklahoma State have before they dismissed their coaches midseason. It just isn't the same thing. They were uncompetitive in those games, and that has not been the case for Arkansas. So I think that's where you get to, like Brandon was saying, the situation where it doesn't benefit you that much unless you know that the program is lost, and you kind of want to send the message to your people, okay, yes, we're going to do something about it. Because the only thing about waiting to the end of the season is then you have all season of rumor mill stuff, angst, you know, people wondering, you know, will they, won't they? But if you can just, you know, get all of that behind you, if you can just kind of set aside the, you know, coaches love to talk about putting aside outside noise. If you can put that aside and get through the season and get to the point where it makes more sense for you to make that kind of move, then you do it. If you really feel like you need to send the message, then sure. But I think now, like Brandon said, in this current era, that's just kind of a relic of the previous era to me, is the midseason, especially the bye week firing.
And I think you can even think about the last time that Arkansas made a coaching change. It was because Chad Morse's teams were already lost. I mean, it was like they were getting run off the field by Western Kentucky, suffered some really terrible losses. I think that's the instance where, and obviously college football's changed since then too, where with this transfer portal period of 30 days. But I mean, at that point, it was like, what difference does this do other than getting a little bit of a head start? That was close to the end of the year. I think Barry Lunny was interim for maybe two games. But I think that that's the type of situation that for Arkansas it makes sense. Not right now, you know, just a few games into the season. You think about the last time Arkansas went over 500 in SEC play was 2015, and that team started with losses to Toledo and Texas Tech. I think 1-3 was their start. I'm not saying this team is going to turn it around like that one did, but I think you do allow a little bit of a grace period, especially whenever you've been competitive in losses. I mean, they're a few plays away from a totally different outcome.
Brandon, when we look at Arkansas losing to Memphis, here we have a tendency to analyze it because we watched every play. We watched the 18-point lead. We watched how everything unfolded. Nationally, it didn't feel like it was that big of a surprise to people to see Memphis beat Arkansas.
No, but the way they lost was a bit of a surprise because, I mean, how often do you see in back-to-back weeks a team driving into the red zone to either, you know, take the lead and maybe ice the game, and they fumble it away? And I said this previously, I think this week, or maybe last week actually, it was last week. Whenever you have a team where there's one area that you're really relying on to win games, which is Arkansas's offense, and the defense is struggling to kind of catch up, at some point if you put too much pressure on one facet to keep delivering, they're going to make a mistake at some point. And I think that's what you saw these last 2 weeks in inopportune situations when everything's magnified, when you fumble the ball there late. What really hurt Arkansas in the second half was not being able to really score. Again, they lean on the offense. You build that 18-point lead, and the offense scored, 3 points in the second half against Memphis. But you also need a defense to play four quarters as well. But it's very clear Arkansas' strength is offense. Their defense is struggling right now. They went into this year, I knew that they had some concerns at linebacker, depth along that defensive line, and that's going to prove itself out potentially, and we've seen it already, late in games, especially if your offense is unable to stay on the field after starting off hot, and you saw that this past week against Memphis. They have to punt the football, the defense is staying out there longer, and you're counting on a unit that just hasn't been able to quite deliver yet, and then the offense kind of breaks under the pressure because you're asking that offense pretty much, you got to score a touchdown on every single drive for us to win a game.
Sorry. Last year, a lot of teams did not make coaching changes because of the House settlement. They were trying to figure out how to put $20.5 million into their budget. It feels like this year, we've already got three teams that are looking for coaches. It's going to be a crowded job market, it feels like, at the end of the year. How crowded do you think it'll be? And let's say Arkansas is in the market for a new coach in 2 months. What's that market look like?
It'll be very crowded. You know, there was no coaching changes in the SEC last year. That's only happened three times this century. There were not a lot of coaching changes in the Power Four last year. And I think a lot of people out there, they thought, well, if you're going to make a change, last year was the time to do it. Several schools were in those type of situations. But as you just mentioned, the revenue sharing, the startup of the College Sports Commission, everything that goes with that, they just really didn't feel comfortable being able to go tell a coach, here's exactly what everything's going to look like in 6 months, because they didn't know. So, for example, like late last night, I got a phone call from someone in Chicago who was at the college football playoff meetings and the commissioner's meetings, and they were discussing playoff format, and they only talked playoff format in their meeting for about half an hour. It was the first time they've talked about the playoff format since late June. And that's a very pressing issue because they have a deadline until December 1st to figure that all out. The reason why I say that is to say this. These commissioners, when they meet, they've been meeting 3 to 4 times a week. They're discussing the SCORE Act, trying to get that pushed through, and the College Sports Commission, revenue sharing, and also enforcement of all these new rules.
The SCORE Act.
The SCORE Act, which is trying to get pushed through Washington right now to codify a lot of the pieces of the House settlement to make it legal and also provide some antitrust protection for the NCAA and the conferences themselves. So they're not, because as you know, everybody's getting sued these days in college sports, and that would be a way to help protect them with that. And that's why the conferences are really trying to push that across in Washington right now.
Why do you two think that the Memphis game was met with such the reaction that it was?
Because you look at the schedule ahead, and if you can't win that one, the question is asked, which ones can you win? Especially, you know, you look, you know, before the season, and it's almost like you just kind of – Memphis has been a really good team for several years, but you almost had to chalk that up as a win for Arkansas to get to their goals. It feels like now they're going to have to really overachieve to even just get to, like, what some people thought would be the baseline of, like, get bowl eligible. Now you – I mean, try and find 4 wins on the schedule, and you're going to have to beat some teams that you really right now – I mean, it'd be a big upset. I think that's why, is you look at the schedule and you ask, how ugly could this get unless they figure some things out?
And I think also from a more national perspective, I think a lot of people look at Memphis and they think of the Memphis team of last year. That was something that I was doing a lot, really, for the first couple weeks when I would look at the schedule, and I'd go, you know, hey, everybody, Memphis is like might be pretty good, but you have to remember this year's Memphis team is not the same as last year's. They had a lot of new. And so I do think people that aren't, you know, locked in on Memphis football or even on Arkansas's schedule, you know, from an outside perspective, you might look at Memphis and think of last year's team and think, oh, that's a pretty good team. So that's why I think Memphis was maybe like a trendy upset pick a little bit before that game. And so that's why you said, you know, people have been on a national front have not been all that surprised by this. But then I think from the Arkansas perspective, if you were looking at this team, you were maybe had your eye on Memphis a little bit. You knew this wasn't that same team. You saw how Memphis doesn't have a great offense, and you saw, you know, how their quarterback doesn't pass particularly well. You saw what happened in the game. You saw that it should have been winnable, and so I think that's why you kind of have those two different sort of perspectives going on.
What's crazy is Memphis has the longest win streak in the FBS right now at 8 games, and it just goes to show you just how much college football has changed. You know, the days of a program winning 19, 20 straight games, those are over. You're not going to see that very often. And then also, I mean, the American Conference is by far the best group of 6 conference this year. You've seen what USF has done. They've beaten Florida on the road. They got nationally ranked. They blew out Boise State in their season opener. Tulane has been very good. They just lost their first game on the road at Ole Miss after beating Duke themselves. And then Memphis beating an SEC team. In fact, I think the American Conference has beaten 2 or 3 SEC teams this year. So college football in a lot of ways is evened out, especially among the teams in the middle all the way down through the group of 6.
Does Memphis look like the playoff front runner from the group of 6?
They'll be there. I think the front runners all are in the American, and it'll be Tulane or USF or Memphis. The thing that helps out Tulane and USF the most is that they don't play each other in the regular season conference. And so I think it's very possible you're going to see Tulane, USF run through the American undefeated in the meet in their championship game, undefeated in conference with a chance to go to the playoff.
I want to address what Hunter Yurchak had to say last week at the Little Rock Touchdown Club, where he said that Arkansas is not in a position to win a national championship right now, compete for a national championship. I think that was his words. When you heard that, Christina, you were surprised that, as you told me, that he would say the quiet part out loud.
That's the thing. I think, and we discussed this on our podcast, where I – appreciate the honesty. I am surprised at the honesty. Not because of Hunter. I mean, we discussed this. That's kind of Hunter Yurecek's style. He's going to tell you what he is thinking. He's going to be pretty honest, which, especially from a media perspective, I appreciate. I'm just always surprised when I see the lack of positive spin on it, the way that you would see, I think, a lot of ADs take. But I mean, at the same time, I think people had a strong reaction to that, because I think a lot of times fans feel they're being blamed for that situation. And I don't know, you know, I don't necessarily think that's what he means, but I think when they look at things that he's said in the past, I think it was last year at the Touchdown Club when he specifically cited Ole Miss's collective and how much more money Ole Miss had. And, you know, when he was talking specifically about collectives, fans had a really strong negative reaction to that. And I think it's because they feel that they are being blamed for Arkansas's problems. And they look at him as, but you're supposed to fix, like, you're supposed to be the person getting the resources. And so I think that's where a lot of the negative response comes from. And so that's why I was a little surprised to see them take that tact toward talking about this issue.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back here to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can go by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Let's go back to our panel now here in Springdale. Brandon, how much do you think finances play into teams that are like competing at the highest level every year? Arkansas, they're at least 14th in the SEC in staff pay. We know they're ahead of Mississippi State. We think they're ahead of Vanderbilt, but Vanderbilt's a private school. We don't know for sure. How big of a factor is that?
It's not so much staff pay, it's how much you're going to spend on your roster. And I know a lot of fans don't want to hear that, but the best teams are usually the richest teams. You see Texas Tech this year. They have a billionaire booster by the name of Cody Campbell, who's trying to tweak some of this stuff in the SCORE Act. He's got a lot of influence in Washington. He's an oil man, a lot of business sense, and he's helped be a big part of them putting in $55 million into their athletics department just in NIL for this calendar year, with most of that going to football on top of the $20.5 million in revenue sharing. And that's why Tech's got a loaded roster, is now the Big 12 favorite. Ohio State last year. There's not a lot of programs out there that are going to be able to make a run in the college football playoff unless they're spending money through NIL in addition to the revenue share. That's a big reason why SMU was able to make the college football playoff the way they did last year. They spent a lot of money to get players from Power 5 conferences as transfers, and they paid them up very, very well. If you're not spending good money and doing so on the up and up, and you can get away with it, but you're doing it legally in this new system, you're going to be destined to be right in the middle of the pack, if not lower. That's just how it is now.
Yurecek talked last week about the so-called third lane, the lane without enforcement. What is the enforcement? Like what is the penalty for cheating right now?
There are no penalties. I mean, and that's the thing. The College Sports Commission was put in place to oversee the House settlement terms and to enforce them. The problem is they don't have a penalty structure installed yet. In fact, as of three weeks ago, they had 4 employees overseeing all the power conferences and any other conferences and schools that opt into the House settlement. So can you imagine 4 or 5 employees overseeing individually every single NIL deal that gets filed to them over $600? That's over 3,000 NIL deals they've had to look over with their own hands and eyes. It's a problem. So they haven't even had time to think about what kind of penalty structure are we going to have in this. Athletic directors and commissioners out there will tell you, well, our hope is that we have a pretty strong penalty structure that has some teeth, so that when someone does get hit with something, everybody else can go, oh, okay, we can't do it that way anymore. But again, much like the NCAA, there's no teeth to anything right now. This is if you are a football program right now, Texas Tech was wise to this. You have an opportunity here to go win a championship and go spend some money and not have to be tied to all these rules, because there's not a lot of enforcement going on, and there probably won't be until at least next year.
Ethan, we can all talk about big picture stuff. The coaching staff's job this week is hard because they've got to keep the players focused on the task at hand. And maybe that's easy with Notre Dame coming in. I mean, it's the first time they've ever played Notre Dame, and that's always a big – doesn't matter what Notre Dame's record is or your record is, it's always a big game. Well, what's the feeling been there this week?
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of players will delete social media during a season, and I actually believe them that they do. But I also think that with kind of the way it's been this week, it's pretty hard to avoid a lot of the chatter, I think. But they do, from what we've, like, talked to players and – whatnot, it seems like they do realize the opportunity ahead. It feels to me like this is like a real last chance. I say last chance, we're pretty early in the season, but to win over a fan base before a bye week. And I think that they do sense that this is an opportunity, that it's not just another logo coming into Fayetteville to play you, that this is a big time program. If they're able to beat Notre Dame, I think that that at least carries them through the bye weeks with some energy around the program and maybe a second breath going into, you know, they've only played one conference game so far. They still got seven more ahead. But I got the sense that they do view this as an opportunity. I think that it's more right now a matter of are they going to be able to perform better. I mean, it's one thing to like keep a positive attitude over and over, but whenever things just keep on going poorly and you aren't making those improvements, that's whenever I think it starts to wear away a little bit and you see some of that positivity die. And eventually, you know, I think back to 2 years ago, Arkansas's team, they kept on being close in games. They finished with four wins, and they got to a point where finally they weren't close. They were getting blown out by Auburn, getting blown out by Missouri, and that's whenever it's just you've lost your team. And I think that this team has some veteran leadership on it. It's a matter of, are they going to be able to actually make those fixes right now and change the outcome? Because ultimately, losses pile up, and you have a chance of losing your team, I think.
Brandon, Notre Dame's 1-2, but those two are by 4 points to a couple of teams that are in the top 10 this week. Miami, on their home field, A&M scored at the end. Some controversy about that play where they scored their game winner. Why is Notre Dame in the position that it's in right now? And there have been a lot of people who have said that maybe Notre Dame can't overcome 0-2 and get to the playoff because they don't have the road to a conference championship like everyone else does. Do you buy that?
I do a little bit, not to be too long-winded, but if they win out, they'll be in the conversation at 10-2 because they've potentially got a game coming up against USC, and USC, I think, could be a top 15, top 10 team by the time they play. Having said that, remember this offseason the SEC really pushed to the CFP committee, we want new metrics to weigh strength of schedule more, which translation is, we want a three-loss team in the CFP from the SEC. That was their big argument last year with 9-3 Alabama, 9-3 South Carolina, when SMU went in ahead of them despite them losing their conference championship game in the ACC and finishing with two losses. So I think the potential here, if Notre Dame were to finish out, win out, you would see their argument be going against some three-loss team potentially, whether it's in the SEC or maybe the Big Ten. I don't see it so much the Big Ten because the SEC is just deeper from top to bottom. The schedules are a little bit tougher, but that's the issue Notre Dame would run into. But I don't see Notre Dame finishing 10-2 this year.
The AP polls come under a little bit of fire this year, and part of it is because one of their voters made some, I would say, boneheaded comments about her ballot. But the Notre Dame's number 22, and there's a lot of people who, why have they not dropped out of the poll? You've heard a lot this year about don't penalize teams for playing good teams and losing. Kind of, you know, give us your thoughts on that balance.
Yeah, I mean, it very much so. And this is what the SEC and others were really wanting. Don't penalize teams for losing against top-tier quality opponents. I mean, I've got Miami number one in the nation in my rankings right now, and that was a game that came down to the end. Notre Dame, I thought, played very well. In fact, their defense is the only defense, despite the struggles they've had lately. Notre Dame's defense was the one that had the most success against Miami's explosive offense so far this year, and they did so on the road. A&M looks legit as a top 10 opponent. Both games came down to the final minute. The issue with Notre Dame is just their defense is nowhere near what it was last season under Al Golden, who ended up winning the Broyles Award. And now they've got Chris Ash, and there's been a lot of criticism of him even getting hired there in the first place. But they're not really slowing anybody down. I mean, heck, they went to Purdue last week against Barry Odom, and they scored 56. Great. Offense has been awesome. But they allowed 30 against a Purdue team that everybody picked to finish last in the Big Ten. So that's it's not just their Achilles heel. I mean, they just it's just a big issue for them. And I don't know if we're going to make picks or whatever for the game, but I've got Arkansas winning Saturday. I came into the regular season thinking Arkansas had a chance, and everything I've seen from Notre Dame on tape, the matchups offensively for Arkansas against their defense and where they're strong and even weakest at, I think Arkansas is going to be able to score a lot of points this game. I can see Arkansas scoring 35 to 38 points against this defense. And if you're playing at home and it's a big opponent and you can hold Notre Dame to four touchdowns, you win this.
What's the dynamic? Because I'm sure you've been in some of these games. The dynamic when Notre Dame comes to town. Because remember when BYU came here a couple of years ago, you had a lot of people who were members of the Church of Latter-day Saints who this is an opportunity for them to see their team locally. I feel like it's probably a similar deal when Notre Dame comes to your campus.
Yeah, I mean, it's a national brand. It's a national fan base. Everywhere they go, they travel. You know, they'll gobble up tickets if they're on the secondary market. Maybe not as much as they would have, but they still will, especially that they're going somewhere that they've never been. On a road game, they're a lot like BYU, like you said, because that's a huge fan base, a huge alumni base. There will be a lot of Notre Dame fans that find their way into Razorback Stadium, and it is a little bit different. I mean, I remember I was covering the was it the playoff semifinal game Notre Dame won, and walking around following Marcus Freeman around, and you know the president of the school who the man of the collar or whatever, and it was just so weird seeing that, and you know they're just so calm and like they're excited, but they're like, yeah, this is great, this is a great win, it's a great win, and I'm like interviewing, and I'm just like, this is so surreal. Notre Dame is its own thing, and it's why so many people love just because college football. The thing that makes college sports great is like no one team is the same to the others. There's different atmospheres, there's different cultures. You don't get that in the NFL. You know, it's everything's cookie cutter. And this, you get different offenses, different defenses, different types of fan bases. And Notre Dame is one of those unique programs that everybody kind of gets drawn to because it's so different.
What do you two think Arkansas has to do this weekend?
Play better defense. And honestly, like Brandon said, win the matchups against Notre Dame. Like if the offense can win those matchups, they're going to put up points. But right now it's just can the defense stick in there too, because like Brandon also said earlier, I feel like there's just a lot of pressure on the offense where it almost feels like a three and out is like it just feels larger than most three and outs do this season, because you're turning it back over to your defense, trusting them to get a stop. I mean, that can be a 14 point swing. So I think they've got to win the matchups. They've got to play well at home. They haven't really done that a lot in recent years. I know they had the Tennessee game last year, but they've got to find a way to get that energy at 11 a.m. and I think kind of try and put up some points early. And give your defense maybe a little bit of cushion to work with. I know they had a chance to this past weekend, and it felt like that non-offensive pass interference call really, I don't know, turned the tide of that game a little bit. But I think they've got to start hot, and you've got to win the matchups.
I think they also really need to play better offensively in the second half. Their two losses, they just kind of disappeared in the second half. You interviewed a Notre Dame reporter on our podcast this week, and he talked about how Notre Dame's defense has actually improved in second half so far. It has been able to limit opponents a little bit more than it did in the first. So they're going to have to do a lot more in the second half, because they're going to have, like you said, they're going to have to score a lot. They can't afford to blink first is kind of the phrase I keep coming back to when I look at this Arkansas defense and this Arkansas offense. And I think when you talk about defensive improvement, we've been talking a lot about tackling and how it just doesn't look like they can wrap anybody up or bring anybody to the ground. Mm-hmm. But I think a big part of it too is Sam Pittman said they don't want their leading tacklers to be in the secondary. They have to do better in the front of the defense. And I think a lot of that comes to the linebackers in the middle of the defense, because they just haven't gotten what they thought they were going to get from those guys in the middle. And they have to find a way to either compensate for that or get those guys to do a little bit more. And I think that's kind of where you need to start as far as the defense getting better.
Arkansas needs to run the ball effectively in the second half and not abandon it, because you're going to put too much pressure on the defense if you get, you know, if you have a drive that's even six plays and it's only a minute and a half because you're throwing the ball or something like that. You got to run the ball in the second half.
What's the SEC race look like to you right now?
It's up for grabs, man. I think there's, you know, even though they lost, I really like Tennessee right now. They got a tough game going to Mississippi State this week. I think Georgia is the leader in the pack until they lose. LSU could be, but their offense has been surprisingly kind of like non-existent at times. their quarterback, Garrett Nussmeier, has been dealing with an upper body injury all season. I don't know how much that's affecting him and how it's affecting what they call even offensively. But I think LSU's got a lot of load of potential there because their defense went night and day from last year. Their defense was historically bad if you look at the ratings that they had. And this year it's legit maybe a top five defense. It's incredible the job they did in the portal this offseason. Not a big believer in Texas. I'm just not. I got a lot of coworkers who live in the state of Texas, and they're like, you know, Arch Manning still got a chance here. You know, he did pretty well last week. And I went, Sam Houston, dude. And he's over there in the end zone flexing against a guy who's going to be selling insurance here in a couple of years. I mean, let's see him do it in a big-time environment on the road. Their defense is pretty good, though, and they've got a favorable schedule. But I really like I'm saying pretty much everybody in the SEC, it sounds like. But I really like Georgia, LSU, and Tennessee. I'm let's see Bama do something on the road. South for OU. But if you've ever been to a game there, and, I mean, Arkansas fans have been in the Cotton Bowl several times, but the Red River is the crowd split 50-50, and depending on what side of the field you're on in one half to the other, you legit have momentum one half, and then the other you don't. And that game flips so quickly if your offense is just struggling a little bit when you don't have that momentum because of the crowd. But I still like OU in that matchup. Until Arch Manning shows me something, OU's defensive line is incredible. They had 10 sacks this past weekend against Auburn. And I was writing this story. I had all these great lines and everything. And I remember the NCAA called up to the press box about 3 hours after the game and goes, hey, we noticed something on tape. We're actually taking that down to 9 sacks. And I was like, no! Changed like all this stuff I had in my column. But it was still a school record. They still had 9 sacks against a pretty good, not great, Auburn offensive line. But they've been doing that all year. I was there for the Michigan game. They made life difficult for Bryce Underwood. He could not throw the ball and feel comfortable back there. That defense is going to have to carry them. But they've got the receivers. They've got a running back and Traylon. But I just don't know because Mateer changed things for him. There's not many quarterbacks out there who are willing to run the ball 19 times to seal a win against Michigan and take big hits. And that's part of the reason why he broke his hand against Auburn. He's putting himself in those type of situations.
You said the NCAA called. The SEC called, too, afterward, with Isaiah Satania, former Purple Dog and Razorback, that play. How's Auburn supposed to feel when they lose a touchdown and the SEC says that touchdown should have been scored?
You can imagine. I mean, I covered Auburn for 7 years, and they're one of the most passionate fan bases in America. I've always been, as a reporter, I always hated it when fans just harped on officiating all the time and everything. That was egregious. Like, they should be very angry. I mean, it took a touch. I mean, it gave OU a touchdown. If they called it, it's not only not a touchdown, but it's a 15-yard penalty, and OU most likely probably has to end up kicking a field goal or trying to go for it on fourth down. That's gigantic. You can't do that.
Now, I think most people in here would say what goes around comes around with Auburn, right? What happened with Bo Nix in the game there about 5 years ago. Let's end with this. Anytime the SEC, they love to have their SEC network specials, and they had one this week with the 9-game conference schedule. We know the opponents. We don't know the dates. You'll have to check back for another SEC network special in December to know the dates. But let's start with you two, Christine and Ethan. What do you think about these teams that Arkansas has drawn?
Is Arkansas going to Texas 2 years in a row, I saw?
And Missouri's coming to Arkansas 2 years in a row.
Weird.
Yeah,
that's not good.
Anytime you have a schedule reset, we've seen this in baseball, it happens quite a bit. What do you think about the so-called permanent opponents, even though they're only permanent for 4 years, Missouri, Texas, and LSU?
I think it was a pretty – I know a lot of people wanted to see Ole Miss too, but I think you got to be pretty happy with – keeping LSU. We talked about this week. If you look at LSU's permanence and Arkansas's,
I think that game's going back to Thanksgiving.
How does it not go to Thanksgiving? Are you going to change the Egg Bowl?
Well, the only way it wouldn't is if the governor gets Arkansas State on the the last weekend of the year.
Whoop-de-doo, that would be a thriller. But you know, no, it would. If you look at it, it all lines up to be Arkansas LSU maybe back on Thanksgiving, and then maybe get OU Mizzou on the last week of the year, which I think would be exciting, and I think most people would be happy for. I know Arkansas Ole Miss has been a wacky series that's a lot of fun. They'll still play each other somewhat often, and I know probably most Arkansas fans would rather, you know, have them than Mizzou, but like, do you really want that? Like, I know Mizzou's actually been a really good program the past years. You cannot take that away, but I really do think that long term, that's probably better to have on your schedule than Ole Miss every year.
You're fine.
Here's the other thing. I see Arkansas fans just hate playing Mizzou. They're like, that's not a rivalry. You talking about it a lot has made it a rivalry.
Yep.
I mean, it's a legit rivalry. I think it's turned into something pretty good, even though I think Arkansas fans don't want to admit it.
It's my favorite thing because I love watching two fan bases argue about who cares less about the other team. It's so fun. It's so fun. They are making it a thing. I agree with you. I think the Mizzou OU thing, I think I went to Missouri, and I think a lot of Missouri fans, especially older Missouri fans from the Big 12 days, would appreciate that, would like having OU there at the end of the season. I think they're glad to have OU there in general, and I think that would work well. And I would love to see Arkansas and LSU at Thanksgiving because that's what we grew up with. I mean, that was like my favorite game of the year. I loved going down there. I was scared to go down there, but it was really fun. And so I always looked forward to that game growing up. And so I'm glad that it's back, and I hope it ends up at the end of the season.
Yeah, no, I would go to War Memorial as a kid. I'm from Hot Springs, and that was, you know, stone's throw away. And those were always a lot of fun. And I think that'll bring back a lot of memories. And for LSU, it's kind of – I think it's a win for them, too, as far as, like, what else would you do in that slot that kind of makes sense. There's some history there. It's not like – just a random team that they're throwing to be your rival, even if LSU's, you know, performed a lot better in the series.
LSU didn't get Alabama, right? I was a little surprised.
They're not playing it.
Yeah, they're not doing it, yeah.
Arkansas and Missouri are like those neighbors who live in a real nice neighborhood, and they can't figure out why the other one is able to live there, too. last one, Brandon, how were the annual opponents determined?
Oh, man. Well, see, like 3 years ago when they're discussing all this, they were using a formula, right? So they were trying to make everything as competitively balanced as possible. They were using a average rolling like score, 4 years of winning percentage. So they try to give everybody a schedule that also respected rivalries, but also gave you maybe a third opponent or a second opponent that would help even out your schedule, right? Well, one could argue that didn't necessarily happen for a couple of schools, but it's because they have like two primary rivals in some instances. So for example, you know, Alabama, I mean, it's Alabama, so everybody that doesn't feel bad for them, they got a pretty tough schedule. The other thing to keep in mind here is, and I actually broke this news, I broke it, even though other people were, anyway. So the permanent opponents, they were selling it as permanent opponents, but they're calling it annual opponents for a reason, because in 4 years, those may very well change, mm-hmm. those three, and they will change from what I've been discussing with people. They're going to look after the 4 years at the average winning percentage of those three teams, and they go, if that's not a rivalry game and there's an issue here with competitive balance, we're going to take them off the schedule, give it to someone else, and give you the other opponent. This will most definitely change here again in 4 years.
Brandon, pretty cool to see you having a Whole Hog Sports logo there in your hand. Yeah. Since you helped lay the groundwork for everything we do, you do a great job at CBS Sports. Will you welcome or thank him for being here?
I must say, you were called out for Notre Dame. I realized I really
all right,
did
Chip.
The whole thing.
We hope you enjoyed our roundtable discussion today. We'll be back in studio tomorrow for a regular show. We'll have Dwight Stewart from the Razorback 1994 National Championship team. He's in town for the UA Sports Hall of Honor. We'll also do our weekend predictions. Hope to see you there or at our website, wholehogsports.com.